Howard Thurman said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go and do that. Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive." Especially today, as we celebrate Earth Day, I am aware that so much of my aliveness comes to me when I am connected to this earth. And that these moments of aliveness, these moments of connection, naturally, beautifully, powerfully fuel my call towards activism and service on behalf of the earth's health and strength. And that is so clear in these dawning, bursting days of spring. Lucy Salyer from your hardworking Board of Trustees shared this poem at our most recent meeting just this last week. It's a poem called "Today" by Billy Collins. If ever there were a spring day so perfect, so uplifted by a warm intermittent breeze that it made you want to throw open all the windows in the house and unlatch the door to the canary's cage, indeed rip the little door off its jamb. A day when the cool brick paths and the garden bursting with peonies seemed so etched in sunlight that you felt like taking a hammer to the glass paperweight on the living room end table, releasing the inhabitants from their snow-covered cottage so they could walk out holding hands and squinting into this larger dome of blue and white. Well, today is just that kind of day. One of the reasons that I have loved returning to New England is that I love spring. I love the land awakening, reemerging from snow, the little messes in the backyard revealing themselves. I also love the winter. Our director of music ministries, beloved Tony, he said that there is no bad weather, only bad gear. A truism that I have taken to heart since my return east. We fish well into the winter, bundled and many layered. Just recently, I came back from a fishing trip with my sides purple with cold, but a smile on my face. Run in the woods with the dog in the snow, frolic with all three of our children, building snow forts, having snowball fights. I am no stranger to the cold, but there's just something different in these warming springtime days when you aren't fighting the elements to be outside. The reservoir calls for a day on the kayak. The ocean calls, the beach calls, the mountains and the forests call, the garden calls out to us, and we answer. Every year, there is a big Earth Day celebration at my boys' school. It's a sweet all-day affair. It's the last day before their April vacation, and it is also the day that I am so awed and grateful for the Herculean task of teaching the very small. The walls just reverberate with their springtime childhood pent-up energy. During this day, every year, we plant the springtime garden at the school with the kids. This is a veggie garden that I help run at the school in which more than 500 students from kindergarten to fourth grade have a chance twice a year to plant seeds and twice a year to harvest the veggies that grow from those seeds. And this was last Friday. Let's all together cast our mind to last Friday. This rainy, cold, miserable day. Not to belabor the point, but the garden is outside. So as I woke in bed to the sound of rain, I was staring down 8 hours outside with tiny people, helping to corral 40 or more children at a time, planting seeds in the rain. Little seeds. Tiny little seeds. It's always a fascinating day, and it was only more fascinating in the cold and in the rain. As we begin our work for the day, we begin by composting the garden. The soil is just black, just impossibly, beautifully black, bursting with potential. And I love the compost almost as much as I love the kids' reaction every year when they learn what it's made up of. Every year, the same jokes. Every year, nonstop talk of poop. Third and fourth graders are finding out what it's made of, even sticking their hands in and smearing it on their face this year. And then the seeds, so many seeds. And this early planting, lettuce, nasturtium, spinach, chard. Later on, cucumbers and watermelons and sunflowers and climbing beans and tomatoes and corn, more. Some of the kids have gardens at home, but many of them don't. For lots of the kids, that garden is one of the few places that they are consciously connected to the cycles of the food that they eat. I love watching them pull the carrots out of the ground in the fall, eyes wide, fascinated by the dirt on their food, washing it, and then biting down. Not all of them love the food that they eat from the garden, but a lot of them do. As we harvest the lettuce and the spinach and the edible flowers in the spring, they'll be brought into the kitchen at the school and used in the school lunches. I think perhaps among the most anonymous and disconnected version of food, school lunches. But somehow in that moment, they know, these kids know that it is their lettuce, that this is the lettuce that they harvested, that they planted just a couple months before, those tiny, tiny seeds. This connection is so needed in these days. In this quicker, more anonymous world in which we live, it matters, these moments of connection. It matters that we know our food, sometimes even our farmers. I love especially many of our farmers, but especially these two, Theo and Ellie, at the church with Brazen Hill Farm. Their farm is just over in Barrington, and I love going there with the kids, especially our kids, knowing the food that we eat, the meat that we have bought there, the vegetables that we have bought there, bringing it home. In part, I just get a kick out of the economics of it. I love supporting all of your businesses. There's something so very tidy when you pay your pledge to the church, and then the church holds the money for a minute and then writes us a check, and then we get that money, and then we bring it over back to you all, back to the BHP or back to the farm, and then we give it back as if we had just been holding it for a tiny little moment. All of these tidy cycles and circles. I smile at the simplicity of it, but there is something powerful in a known economy. I think it's important, especially on this Earth Day, because these massive systems of destruction and degradation thrive in the dark. The megaliths and the Monsantos and the other impossibly large, unaccountable agribusinesses thrive when we do not pay attention. Systems of oppression, of subjugation, thrive when we do not pay attention. The climate races off the cliff. Our consumption careens unabated. But there is now, and has always been, this other way. This deeper, juicier, more beautiful, more connected way. And it is, as always, a path of awakening, a path of connection, a path of joy. I love the song that the South Church folk sang just a moment ago, "This Land is Your Land." As many of you know, when Woody Guthrie wrote it, the original lyrics included some other verses. This one first, he wrote, "There was a big high wall that tried to stop me. The sign was painted, it said private property, but on the backside, it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me." Guthrie also wrote another protest verse that was never officially recorded, but was discovered and then shared by his son Arlo, as well as Pete Seeger. The other one went, "On a bright, sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. As they stood hungry, I stood there wondering if God blessed America for me." The lost protest verses were omitted because when the song was released, it was the era of McCarthy. It was a dangerous time. There was a fear-based national narrative which sought to lay blame and destroy lives. Time of xenophobia, time of change, time when people were rising up and making their voices heard. By the relief office, I saw my people. I stood there wondering if God blessed America for me. This land is your land. This land is my land. We know this is our land when we are in it, when we are connected to it, when we do not just hurl through our days, but when we look up and we look down and we take it in. And when we know this land is ours, we do not sit by as it is destroyed. When we know this land is ours, that this world is ours, that her people are ours, that her struggles are ours, we do not swallow rosy, simplistic nationalist myths, but rather we see through and we ask, who is shut out of this American dream? We take in the truth of this moment with the widest eyes and the most awakened hearts. This whole land is our land. The scorched earth just a few feet away from us right now, and the magnolia in blossom in the front yard just a few feet away from us right now. And with this wideness and openness, with the powerful connection and love from this place, we are drawn into action. As many of you know, I love to fish. When I'm out in nature, I am often there to fish. And early on in the dawning of my fishing passion, I was given a beautiful essay, part of a beautiful book called The Longest Silence by Thomas McGuane. In it, he writes, "We have reached the time in the life of the planet and humanity's demands upon it when every fisherman will have to become a river keeper, a steward of marine shallows, a watch person on the high seas. We are beyond having to put back what we have taken out. We must put back more than we have taken out. We can't fully love this world without fighting to preserve and sustain her. We can't be awake and aware of this moment of our trajectory as a species, of our trajectory as a planet, and not act. Many of you gathered just yesterday for the March for Science. Next Saturday, another march with the Resistance and Climate Action New Hampshire co-hosting with Lauren even speaking, which should be awesome. Here in Market Square, 12 o'clock, with a rally to follow. Many of us will be there. Come if you can. And as always, check out websites, One Action New Hampshire, One Action Maine, for more information. So many opportunities to rise up, to speak out. And like Howard Thurman said, we ask first what makes you come alive and go and do that. This is why mostly I took on the leadership of that garden. Not because I am burdened with too much free time, should we say. Certainly on one level I love to garden, and it seemed at the time that the volunteering gods were looking down on me, knowing full well how deeply Lauren and my ministry has been blessed and buoyed and challenged and furthered and inspired and shaped by so many of your volunteering, your time and your passion and your wisdom and your expertise so generously. I said yes, because out there in the cold and the rain just a few days ago, more than any tiny bits of suffering, I was alive. Hearing the kids shriek in delight as they found so many worms in that delicious, rich soil, bursting and beautiful. Shrieks with worms held in their hands. And we talked about worms and soil and food as they planted the seeds, which they will return to harvest. I was alive. And I know somehow that out of the hundreds of kids that come out to that garden over the course of many, many years that it has been there for them, stewarded by many before me and now me and many others, more than a few of them get it. More of the few of them will experience their food differently. More than a few of them will think about the soil and the earth and those worms. Some will go on to have gardens of their own. What is the work calling out to you? As the windows open and the sweetest of breezes long awaited blow, as the earth summons you, what makes you come alive? Go and do that.